Whether this is her first Mother's Day or her 40th, she deserves more. Shop tons of stunning on-trend jewelry for every budget at Diamonds Direct. Diamond fashion jewelry, beautiful birthstones, everyday pearls, starting at just $200. Commemorate the real loves of her life with a gorgeous pendant featuring the birthstone of the one who made her mom. This Mother's Day, Diamonds Direct is everything you need to say thank you. Diamonds Direct, your love, our passion. Online at DiamondsDirect.com.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Welcome to Ethnically Ambiguous, a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Hello!
Hi, I'm Shireen.
Hi, and I'm Anna, and this is Ethnically Ambiguous.
Dun dun dun! Today, we have such a lovely conversation, truly one of our favorites. We are joined by Chris Garcia. He's a comedian, he's a podcaster, he has a podcast out right now that you should all go listen to called Finding Raffy. He also has another podcast called Scattered, and they're both amazing. He is such a lovely person to talk to, and yeah, it was a great time.
Yeah, go check it out, and definitely check out Finding Raffy, which is also on the iHeartMedia Network and wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah.
Stay tuned.
Who are we? Where do we come from? Who do we become? What is it to be? What to be is it? Where are we? Who are my parents? Where are my pets? Why were we born? We are Ethnically Ambiguous.
That's the start of the episode. Hi, this is Ethnically Ambiguous. You already know that I'm Shireen.
And I'm Anna.
We're just going to jump right in this time. Our guest today is Chris Garcia. He's a stand-up comedian. He's a TV writer. He hosts two podcasts, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's a bunch of other things that we're going to talk about. So welcome, Chris.
Thanks for having me. Good to see you.
Yeah.
Thanks for joining us. And you are officially our favorite guest. Just kidding. We say that to everyone.
Thank you. I have a feeling, but...
Yeah. I love that. It's like, we are so excited to have you. But I will say, I'm not just saying that, because we actually have tried to get you on the show for a little while now.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember this?
I wasn't ready. Yeah, yeah. I wasn't ready for it. I just wasn't ready, but now I feel totally prepared. That was months ago, and now
yeah.
I've done some soul searching, and I'm ready to be here.
Yeah, yeah. You're ready.
I built up for it. Yeah.
That's what we need. We always tell people, like, look, if you're not ready, go away for a while. Soul search.
Do some shrooms. Yeah.
Yeah, I went to the desert, and I just got back yesterday. Went right into the daily zeitgeist, and now this, and now... I'm self-actualized. I'm a self-actualized nice. Person now.
Wow.
Thank you.
You've come a long way.
Yeah.
But no, thank you for joining us. We're happy to have you. Let's just jump right in. Can you tell our audience where you were born and where you were raised?
Sure. I was raised here in Los Angeles in Inglewood. That's where I was born. And I lived mostly in South LA my young life. Inglewood, Westchester, and North Redondo Beach. That's and now my mom lives in Torrance, so like South LA.
And where did your parents grow up?
My parents grew up in Cuba. So they grew up in Cuba, and My sister was born there, and in the early 70s, they left, or fled, as some people say. They fled, and then I was born. And then I was born a few years later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you were the first child they had in the States?
First and only child, 12 years after my sister. They swear it's not an accident, but that's an accident amount of time. But I think, the more I think about it, they probably didn't want to bring another kid into what was going on into Cuba during those years.
Yeah.
And so they waited till they were here in the States, and then they had me.
Yeah, that's fair.
That's fair.
Yeah, it's valid. I'm like, okay, yeah, that's fine. There's a weird gap where my sister's kind of my aunt, but it's worth it. It's fair. Yeah.
Was she really did they make you think she was your aunt, or it just felt like she was your aunt?
It felt like she was my aunt, but then also growing up, and like when I was like 5 or 6, they just thought she was my mom. There's like, oh, there's a young Latina mother. Yeah. Like Latina ladies start young, and so this must be her kid. But she was only 12 years older, but she's also a lot more mature than I am. So she was already, the discrepancy in age has just been, you know, accentuated by the fact that she's always had her shit together and I haven't, you know. So she's a responsible one, and she was kind of born into it and thrown into it, you know, having to partially raise me. And I was like, oh, fun.
Did your parents immigrate straight, or flee rather, straight to LA, or was it like, did they move around a little bit and then settle in LA?
They had to move. So my parents asked to leave Cuba in the late 60s. And as a result, my dad, for mere just asking to leave the country, was thrown into a work camp that was going on in the late 60s and early 70s in Cuba. If you had stated that you wanted to leave the country, Fidel determined that you were like an enemy of the state.
Mm-hmm.
So if you wanted to flee, if you were Catholic or gay or like mentally unstable at this time, Fidel would, you know, put you in a work camp. So my dad was in a forced work camp where he pulled sugarcane for like a little over a year. And he was like taken from my, it's terrible. He was like taken from my mom and my sister. And he just got a letter at the house that was like, you have 12 hours to get your affairs in order and like pay your bills and all this stuff. And then next thing you know, you're just thrown in the back of a truck and taken to a work camp outside of Havana. And as my dad would tell the stories, that when he came out, he was so skinny from like, you know, surviving off spoiled water and spoiled rice and stuff like that. He was so skinny that when he showed up at the door, my sister, who was like a kid at the time, said, "Mommy, hay un hombre en la puerta." Mom, there's a guy at the door. Like, she didn't even recognize her dad over the course of a year. So after that, he was, you know, he was traumatized. He was left with PTSD and stuff and was put in Mazora, which is like this kind of notorious psychiatric hospital in Havana. And we still can't determine whether it was punitive or if my dad actually received help there. But he was like given electroshock therapy to try to help him. And I guess it kind of helped. But shortly after that, my dad was allowed to leave the country, but didn't have the funds to leave with my mom and sister. So he went to Spain and worked there for a couple years, and then flew my sister and my mom out. So, and then they lived in Madrid for a couple years, and my mom kind of says it was kind of like a magical time. And then they came to the United States. But you all know these types of stories, right? Like, we all have our own version of
it. Yeah, of course.
But that's my parents' version. But there's, it's known among like a certain generation of Cubans have experienced this, but Cuba changes so often and so much that when I went to Cuba a couple years ago, like some of my relatives had never even heard of this, like the 10 million ton harvest, which was what Fidel was trying to do, is to raise, he was trying to harvest 10 million tons of sugar cane. And to do that, Fidel was like basically enslaved fellow Cubans that didn't agree with him, you know, and it's just kind of been buried in the history books. And so a lot of people hadn't, even my own family, hadn't even known about that time in Cuban history.
Jeez.
Just because like they don't share, I mean, like, it's like, is it kind of just how our history books are fucked? Are their history books also fucked kind of thing? Like, is it just propagandized?
Yeah, it's propagandized a lot. So it's like it wouldn't be taught in schools. It would just be. Yeah. And then the people who probably had experienced it never wanted to talk about it. And so, you know how those older generations are, they just bury it. Like my mom would say, lo bloqueé, like I blocked it out. And so they probably, just to survive day to day and not think, they just probably buried it and never thought about it, because if you thought about it all the time, it would probably crush you, you know?
Wow.
So it was news. Of course, my aunt, my dad's sister knew about this time. But she didn't, like, tell her kids about it, you know, because they just don't do that. But yeah.
Wow. We had these women, Frida and Carmen, on from a show called Take Her Easy, and they're both Cuban women, and they had kind of similar-ish experiences trying to leave the country. One of them literally left, like, floating on a raft. We learned on that episode how, like, if they get you and you don't make it out, like, as you're trying to escape, like, just the situation you find yourself in because you are now an enemy of the state for just trying to find a better life. It's pretty surreal. I can't really imagine just to be put in, like, a work camp.
And all he wanted to do is, like, and my parents, they loved Fidel when he first came to power. And I think a lot of Cubans did, because Bautista was so corrupt. And it was like it is here, where there was, like, the rich people are great, and then the rest of everyone is kind of fucked. And so while, you know, there was mobsters and corruption and the 1% there, the rest of the people, the common people like my parents who were poor, you know, my dad was, like, homeless as a kid. My mom left school in, like, the sixth grade to help her mom and stuff like that, like, just folding laundry around the neighborhood. They were struggling. So when Fidel came to promise equality and all that stuff, they were really excited. But then as the years slowly went on, it turned out that he was, you know, just as corrupt as everybody. And they had a different experience that Cubans in the 70s and 80s and 90s all had, kind of different experiences, because they, you know, they kind of switch things around so often. But for that time in Cuban history, it was just really harsh. And so I can't believe my parents survived it and lived to tell the tale, you know. They were married throughout that whole time, and being separated from Cuba to Spain and then coming to the United States. And that they were like, this is going to be easy. And then it was, like, terrible. Like, my mom stress ate a loaf of bread every day when she came to the United States. My poor dad was hospitalized. Like, it wasn't the dream that they set out for, you know. So then there's that. But it's an incredible story. And, you know, you don't really hear that stuff that much about Cuba, because Cuba is so used as an ideological pawn for both sides. Mm-hmm. Like, and I'm not a Miami Republican Cuban at all. I'm, like, a Bernie Cuban, you know? Mm-hmm. And, like, but both sides, and it happens in the news a lot. Like, I heard something on a podcast the other day that they were talking about how Cuba was 90% vaccinated and they were going to start sending the vaccine to other countries. And I was like, not when I talked to my family. My family in Cuba said, yeah, they had vaccines, but they didn't have syringes to administer the vaccines. And it was a mess, you know? And so, like, people here sometimes will hate America, which rightfully so. And then people in Cuba hate America. And so the only people that really suffer in this ideological game of chess is the Cuban people themselves. And so it's hard to believe whatever the media says about Cuba, whether it's on the left or the right. And we really should just be listening to the people who are, you know, struggling on the island, you know?
Yeah. I think that's true for so many places in this world. Like, I just have given up faith in news in general. Like, it's just, there's always an angle, whether or not it's whatever it is, it's always some sort of capitalist, like, war-driven angle. So, yeah, I think it's completely correct. Just listen to the actual people themselves and what they have to say about their situation versus, like, a white mouthpiece that's, like,
that's just supporting whatever narrative that people want to use to control people or people's opinions of a certain place, you know? And so that Cuba, that, I mean, it happens with so many countries all over the world, you know? But it seems like Cuba's always, you know, people have a fascination with Cuba, whether it's some fucking NYU
dude. Like Havana Nights and all this.
Yeah,
like,
Havana Nights.
Yeah.
Hong Kong driving a classic car. Or it's some guy named Trevor in NYU, like, dorm room that loves podcasts. That's like, dude, Che is the man. And you're like, none of these things are necessarily true.
Yeah.
But people always have, there's always something about Cuba that people love to talk about, you know?
Like a cool shirt.
Yeah, like, whoa.
Yeah. So like the Che, like that symbol of revolution, and you're like, okay.
That's just really good graphic design. Like Che is the Michael Jordan logo of my parents' oppression in Cuba, you know?
And
like,
exactly.
And Che was hot, and that's a fire ass logo, you know? And of course people are like, people in Canada or wherever in Germany, like, ooh, look, I got a Che Guevara shirt. Yeah. And you're like, oh, yeah, it looks cool as hell.
Genius marketing.
Marketing.
Yeah. God.
Yeah. Who is his PR team?
I know.
Amazing PR.
Who designed that? Yeah. It's so interesting. Like, even, I mean, this is a very off topic, but like, even the most, like, Nazis, for example, there's like a symbol associated. There's always like this very identifying thing that like people like to parade around. And in their case, obviously, it's like this evil cause where it's like, I'm proud to, like, this is who I am identity wise. But it's kind of the same thing with someone wearing any kind of political shirt, because they're saying like, look at me, this is who I am, but actually I don't know anything better.
But then graphic design, you look at that, or you look at a cross, or you look at all these things, you're like, these are really good.
Yeah.
Like, this is good work. Of course, there's something about it that I people will stand behind. They're like, oh my gosh, that is a powerful thing.
Yeah.
This star is really nice. And, but like, you know, it doesn't hurt to have fire graphic design, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, that's funny. My favorite accessory are rings. And there are so many rings that are crosses that are just so cool, but I refuse to buy them because I'm just like, I don't like that. Like, I just like the shape. I just like that little, the X, you know, but it's just, no. Yeah.
Yeah, same here. Like, my parents are always trying to put a necklace, like a crucifix necklace or something. And like, they look cool, but I'm like, it's not my thing, but you gotta admit, it looks cool as hell, you know?
Yeah, I agree. Okay, so your family, they move. So they were in Spain for a while. What, like, leads them to L.A.?
My mom's parents fled Cuba and ended up in Los Angeles. And my dad, I think, had promised them that they would see them again. And so, because I think they helped them pay my mom and sister's way out of Cuba eventually, once they were working in the United States. So, and also my dad wanted to work in the aerospace industry, and Los Angeles at that time was really where it's at, where there was like companies like Northrop and McDonnell Douglas and Boeing and all that stuff. There was like a whole area of town that was aerospace and NASA and stuff. And so my dad was a machinist by trade, and then they moved to the United States, and eventually my dad started working as a like aerospace machinist.
Wow.
And you know, I had this weird feeling in my head my whole life that my dad wanted to be an engineer or something more than a machinist, even though that's it's a good trade and you have to have talent and be smart to have it. But for some reason, I thought being born in America, because he didn't really learn English that well, that I got in his way or something. And then when I was recording, I recorded this podcast called Scattered about taking my dad's ashes back to Cuba, you know? And I went back to this museum where I would go to all the time in Los Angeles, the Aerospace Museum. And there happened to be these really old docents standing around, and all these docents had worked at companies that were associated with NASA. And so I randomly walk up to this guy and I'm like, just random question, if I could interview for you for a second. My dad worked at Rockwell, and he was a machinist. And do you know anything about that? And he was like, whoa, I worked at Rockwell, and I was an engineer. And we're standing right below the Endeavor, which is the greatest spacecraft of all time. It is like the Cadillac Jordan of all space shuttles. And we're like, and it's humongous, and we're standing right below it. Now, he was like, what years did your dad work there? And I was like, my dad worked there from like 81 to 90 or something. He was like, well, your dad probably put those bolts right in there. And like, I had, because my dad was so humble and hardworking,
Yeah.
He never told us that he had built part of the space shuttle, like the greatest space shuttle of all time. And that was like a really cool thing, like a really proud thing that I had never known until he had passed away. But like,
that's incredible.
He worked in aerospace at this company called Rockwell, and he made parts that went up in space. And that's, I just incredible. Think it's so dope in a world like today where we're all like, hey, check out what I did. Like, I made soup. And you take a picture, and my dad made the fucking door to the space shuttle, and he didn't say one word about it. You know?
He's like, oh, this old so thing.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah. I'm glad that you had that moment. That must have felt really magical, just to like have it happen. Like, it just, those, I don't know, very kismet. I want to talk more about your podcast, Scattered, but before we do that, let's take our first break. We'll be right back.
Live Nation presents Concert Week. Now through May 14th, get $25 tickets to over 5,000 shows. That's up to 75% off a summer full of your favorite artists, like 21 Savage, Alanis Morissette, Cage the Elephant, Celeste Barber, Dierks Bentley, Fade, Hootie and the Blowfish, Janet Jackson, Kidz Bop Kids, Meghan Trainor, Bissell Pluma, Sarah McLachlan. Get tickets to more than 5,000 summer shows for just $25. Until now through May 14th. Visit LiveNation.com/Concert Week to learn more and plan your summer with Sean Paul, Sum 41, 30 Seconds to Mars, oh, and Two Door Cinema Club.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
Hey, this is Jody Sweetin from the podcast How Rude, Tanneritos. As a nostalgic voice from your past, I'm here to remind you that amongst the stressful and chaotic existence we live in 2024, you deserve to get away. It's time for a vacation, no matter when you're hearing this. And let me tell you how you'll get there. The 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe. Want to bring the family to the mountains with the Santa Fe's available H-Track all-wheel drive? Well, it's got standard third-row seating and available dual wireless charging pads for the kids who just want to stare at their phone and not talk to you. You know what I mean. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Okay, we're back. I interrupted you in your magical telling of that memory, but let's go back into it. You mentioned that you have a podcast called Scattered about how you went back to Cuba and scattered your dad's ashes. Can you tell us like why you decided to make a podcast out of that experience and what that experience was like for you?
Yeah, I didn't feel like I actually decided to do it. It kind of was another almost act of kismet or something, where I was recording a set for the show Two Dope Queens, the WNYC show. They came out to Los Angeles to put on some shows at the Terragram Ballroom. And I was booked to do it that night. And it happened to be the night I was visiting my dad at hospice. And I was told that he only had like a couple days to live, that he had pneumonia for the third time. So then I almost just canceled the show because I was like, I'm not going to do this. You know, I'm like so sad.
Yeah.
But then sometimes when you're like a comic, you get like the bat signal and you're like, this is actually the time when you should perform. And so I was at hospice all day and I was like, I better go home and like take a shower before going to the show, and I need to have time. And I threw on a sport coat, which I never wear. Like I just like, it was like I was going to a job fair or something.
Yeah,
and I was like,
yeah.
I'm a professional. And I show up and the first person I see backstage is John Hamm, and I'm looking I'm looking like a 40-week unshowered Belushi. Like I look like garbage and I feel like garbage, and I didn't even think about my set. And then, you know, Phoebe and Jessica introduce me and I just do this set that I didn't even think about, and it was just like a really one of those moments as a comic that you just feel like vulnerable and unfiltered. Mm-hmm. And I just had like a really nice set. And it felt nice. And, you know, my dad passed away later that week on Super Bowl Sunday.
Wow.
And that was so sad. But WNYC was pretty moved by the set. And they, like, emailed me and were like, hey, that was pretty cool if you would, like, consider doing a podcast or something.
Wow.
And I was like, I'm so sorry, but my dad just passed away.
And they were
like, oh my God, we're so sorry. We're real big fans. If you, we know you travel and do shows all over the place. If you ever consider doing a recording something, have an idea, just let us know. Mm-hmm. And so I went through, you know, a couple months of like grieving and feeling sad and all that stuff. And finally I hit the road again and I happened to be going to Miami where my grandparents eventually moved and they had just passed away. But my mom was there taking care of their house and getting their stuff in order. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why, but I was like, WNYC should come and talk to me and my mom. Mm-hmm. And they flew right there. Two producers showed up and just recorded this conversation between my mom and I. That was we recorded for like 7 or 8 hours.
Wow.
And like the WNYC people were like, your mom is what we call a good talker. Because my mom was like so engaging and so interesting and so raw. Like I would start crying and she would start clowning me and stuff. And then I would be like, mom, if dad was alive for 5 minutes, like what would you say? And she's like, say, I'd fuck him. And I'd be like, what? And she was like, 5 minutes isn't enough. And she's just like cackling. I was like, oh, gross. And so it was like we had all these like very heartfelt conversations, but also very funny conversations. And through these conversations, my mom revealed that it was my dad's dying wish to be scattered along the coast of Cuba.
Wow.
And then I was like, well, that's what we have to do if that's his dying wish. She's like, no way. I am not. We left all these years ago. We are never. I'm not going back. Mm-hmm. And so that became the premise of the podcast. And we kept on recording over the course of 2 years, from me talking to my mom to me finding out so much about my dad. Like I talked to some friends of his that I had never met before or known of him, because I talked about my dad so much in my act, but it turns out I didn't know that much about his life because he didn't talk about it.
Yeah.
Like all this stuff I told you about his life in Cuba earlier, I had not known that until after he passed away. Like I'd kind of known some hints about it and stuff. But so I learned all this amazing stuff about my dad and him and my mom and their story. And then eventually we go back to Cuba. And that was like a whole, that was like the most incredible, most beautiful, harrowing experience of my life, was to go with my mom and my sister and return to Cuba to do this for my dad. It was like, it was an incredible movie. And, you know, as like my dad wanted me to be an engineer or something, he didn't want me to be a stupid comedian, you know?
Yeah.
And so when I don't know if any of y'all have experienced this, but when my dad died, I felt like kind of a failure. I felt like I didn't get to be the engineer or something. So I felt this pressure to do something for him. And I was like, I got to do one thing for him. And that felt like I have to like make his dying wish come true and go to Cuba. And then I learned that I'm not a failure. And I actually got to do what my dad came to America for me to do, is to do whatever the fuck I wanted. You know, like after going to Cuba and realized how hard it is for people to be themselves and live their dreams there. It all came around full circle. And it was just a very beautiful experience for me. And it's in my most vulnerable place, and it was a little scary to record this in podcast form, to put that all out there.
Yeah.
And I was scared that my mom or family wouldn't like it, but my mom loves it so much. And, you know, like, and she mostly speaks Spanish and probably doesn't get the whole thing, but she was just like, she just thinks the way I think about it, it was like such a wonderful tribute to my dad. You know, he's not a famous guy. He's not gonna have a Wikipedia page or anything like that, but he's just like a solid, cool dude that we got to make this for.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So
I love that.
Yeah.
I really am happy you had that experience. Also, I mean, me personally, I'm terrified of grief. Like I can't understand what you went through. I don't want to understand what you went through, but I think what you did is a really interesting way to process your grief. It must have felt a little bit therapeutic, I imagine, to like do an action and have like a mission. I don't know. And that mission is like for your father. I find that really beautiful.
Thank you. It really, I talked to my, I never, I don't really listen to podcasts. I'd been on podcasts and even listened to those, you know. And so when WNYC was like, who do you want to talk to? I was like, my mom and my therapist. And they're like, that's okay, sure. And so we go and talk to my therapist, and what he says, I'm like, is there any like psychological merit to having a podcast about my dead dad? And he's like, it might feel good to put a head to put a stone on the headstone and walk away. And that's what it really felt like.
Wow.
But it's so funny that you said it was therapeutic, but it totally came from a therapy session that my my therapist was like, this could be good a good way for you to process it.
Yeah.
And it's been 5 days. My dad's birthday is tomorrow.
Wow.
And then the anniversary of his death is the next day. So
wow.
It's crazy that we're recording this podcast today, but it's been 5 years since my dad passed away, and I still think about him about a lot of the time, like a lot, like every day. And but I just also feel lucky at the same time, and it's so cool to have this piece of work that reflects that.
Yeah,
you know?
I will say, for as long as I've known you, just through like comedy and stuff, I feel like I've always known about your dad's story. I feel like I feel like you've done such justice to his memory. Like, I know also late in life he was experiencing Alzheimer's.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I mean, I think that's, like, just to keep his memory alive and, like, his story. I think you've done such justice that I hope one day I could do for, like, one of my, you know, parents. Because I think it is true that, like, immigrant parents, like, trying to get them to open up and hear about their life experiences, it's, like, one of the hardest things, like asking your parent a question. Like, I don't know if you ever experienced this. Like, sometimes I like just ask my dad something and he'll like be like, I don't know. And you're like,
yeah.
You're like, no, you do know. You lived it. Like, just answer. And they'd be like, well, it was a long time ago. And you're like, oh my God, give a straight answer. I swear to God, give a straight answer. You know, you can't, it's hard to get it out of them. So like, you really do kind of have to like do your own kind of investigation at times, like look at photos, ask, be like, well, what's this, or like, what's that, well, what were you doing during this time? And I'm like currently doing that a lot with my own dad, and it's like such a process.
You have to do it. I mean it's like pulling teeth. They don't want to talk about it, they don't want to think about, they left that shit behind, and that's where it's gonna die. Like, they don't want to bring that stuff at all, because it's a matter of self-preservation. You know what I mean? If they thought about this stuff, or leaving their parents behind, or a loved one, or anything, or just thinking about something from the past, like it's like a game of Jenga. I'm sure they think if you pull one little block too hard, they're gonna come apart,
and
the
collapses,
whole fabric of who they are and is gonna come to pieces. You know, on a pile on the table. But I found it very. And I think it was actually very good for my mom and sister to talk about this stuff, because they got to process it. Because a lot of this stuff is unprocessed, you know, unprocessed trauma, which they pass on to us, you know, and then we pass on to the next generation, and we never work through. But to have a dialogue about it and to reveal your true feelings about it is really healthy, and it's really helpful. And none of our parents or grandparents really want to do that because it's too much, but it would be so good for them. And so good for us to have an open dialogue about this stuff. Like, it really, truly, like, generational trauma is something I think about all the time, you know, because I now have a daughter and I think about what I'm going to pass on to her. But, like, there's so many things I didn't understand about my dad at all. Like, sometimes if there was a knock on the door, he would, like, flinch. And I'm like, whoa, that's a pretty crazy overreaction. Or, like, he'd, like, attack umpires versus Little League games. I'm like, where the hell does this come from? And through, you know, talking to my mom and conversations with my sister, I was like, oh, this came from a very difficult upbringing. And, you know, and sometimes I'll find myself, I'm like, am I about to kick this car? Like, I'm like, where did this, this is not where I come from. I was like, oh, maybe I've seen this fool kick a car a couple times.
Yes.
And now I'm the guy kicking the car. But like, you could stop and take pause for 1 second and think about it and be like, oh, this is like a cycle that we're like, you know, spiraling forward towards the future and future generations and stuff like that. But in my new, not to like talk about just my podcast and stuff, but in my new podcast, I have this new one with Raffi, who's the children's singer. I don't know if you grew up listening to him.
Yeah.
But Raffi is Armenian, and
his he was born in Turkish occupied Cairo, but and his parents are from Armenia, and they you know, they had fled the Turks and stuff like that. But I didn't know any of this stuff, and I'm like, this person has experienced the same thing with like his parents and his dad and his mom and their expectations. And it's something that we all have in common as first and generation, like first and second gen kids or beyond us, is that we're all almost fighting or grappling with the past or with expectations and stuff. And it was so cool to get to know him and talk about his childhood and reflections on his childhood and how he was raised and how he wanted to present something different to, you know, the kids of the day, like to like show kids the respect that he didn't get as a child. And it's been really cool because in the last podcast I was the son, and now I'm the dad of like a 1-year-old girl. And it's crazy that these podcasts have just come from like I didn't pitch any of these. It was just like after Scattered, you know, some producers would approach me to talk about doing a podcast about death or some stuff like that. And it felt kind of icky and kind of sad. I didn't want to talk about dead stuff anymore. Mm-hmm. But like I had literally heard Raffi for the first time in my life for like a week or two. And these people approached me like, do you want to do a podcast about Raffi? And I was like, absolutely. I have a 2-month-old daughter. And this is like the perfect time to do this. So it's just crazy that both of these humongous parts of my, like, it's not, you don't really experience any crazier than a parent dying or having a kid or someone dying or someone being born, you know? So the fact that these two huge events are kind of being documented right now. And, you know, this podcast is not about me at all. It's about Raffi and his amazing legacy, but to be able to think about these things and ponder these huge life events, like these essentials of life that we all experience, has been pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, that podcast is called Finding Raffi, correct?
Yeah. And it's the sequel to a couple years ago, same year Scattered came out, 2019, there was this great podcast. It was like nominated for Peabody and everything called Finding Fred about Mr. Rogers.
Right.
And it was really good. And, so this is kind of like a sequel, or it's like a follow-up in the Finding series about finding Raffi. And so I do a deep dive with Raffi. I get to, you know, I meet him, and we've recorded and had a lot of interviews together and talk about him and his philosophy for life and you know, child development. And it's been a really cool experience. I'm really proud of it because it feels like a nice thing in the world, you know?
Yeah.
Like Anna was there and Becca was there, but I was on the like Daily Zeitgeist yesterday, or I guess it's today at this episode, which was great. But all the news was like, ugh. You know, it's like the news is such a bummer right now. And it's because it's really, you know, and you're just reporting current events and it's just so hard. And the world is in such a tough place right now. But to offer something that is like hopeful and sweet and kind and like rooted in respect right now and just silly like Baby Beluga and silly songs for kids feels really nice. And
it
so,
is nice. Yeah.
So that's one thing that people who have listened to have said is like, this was like a nice 35 minutes. Like, thank you. Like, you know.
Yeah, you don't really know how much you need that stuff until something you experience something. But I'm like very fascinated with generational trauma. I've been thinking about it with my family for a long time because there's so many things that I feel like immigrant parents in particular, they're master compartmentalizers. Oh, I don't know how it's possible. Like my mom had a very like difficult life. And the way she talks about it, if I ever pry anything out of her, is so casual. And like she's had to do that again, like you said, like survival. They do that for survival. Like if they let any of that in, they can crumble, you know? And that's not like, I don't know. It's just, and then the more I learn about my family, the more my issues make sense.
Yeah, because true, I'm just like, right?
It's a cycle that repeats, unfortunately. So I'm really amazed. And like, I'm glad that Raffi chose the life he chose because that's like a very clear effort to break that cycle, you know?
You should listen to the first episode of it because he said something that just completely floored me. I was like, because I was asking about if like these songs were a relation, or maybe it's the second episode where he's like, are these songs like a reaction to your childhood or like,
or no, does your culture impact who you are today? And he's like, of course. But then he goes on to say, like, we are responsible to our culture, but we're responsible to ourselves and become who our authentic selves. And he put it in such a way that when wow. I heard it, I was like, I felt like a warm embrace. I felt like I was like, oh my gosh, I feel so seen. Like, I just feel like it's so hard, you know, because our parents have gone through so much, more than we could even imagine. So they don't mm-hmm. even want to tell us about it because we're really so soft compared to them. Like, my dad was tough. Like, I studied poetry. I use the word journal as a verb. Like, I wear eye mask and stuff every night. Like, all this stuff.
Yeah.
And my dad's like, yeah, you don't want to know about that. You don't want to know about selling diluted roach poison door to door or trading cigarettes for a bag of rice. Like, you can't even handle this. But then they can't even handle it. I mean, they handled it, but they don't want it. They just don't want to be there anymore. And it's completely understandable.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think, I mean, if you could have that conversation with them, you know, and there's different levels of trauma and some stuff people don't ever want to talk about. And sometimes it feels intrusive and stuff. But like with my parents' particular case, like there was like entire years that they blocked out of something like huge events. And then my mom was like, oh, I guess that did happen. But like they just have to, you know, bury it. Like they are the master compartmentalizers. Like it's wild.
Yeah.
It's wild.
Yeah, on that to say like your parents go through so, I mean, literally, I know it's like the classic cliche of like, I walked in snow by myself for 10 miles to go to school. But like my dad is a perpetrator of that. But he also will be like, you know, if I spoke out of turn, because my dad grew up in Iran, like the teachers had a stick that they would hit you.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Like, it's not like you're getting detention, all right, kid. No. It was like they would smack the shit out of you.
Yeah. They still do that in Syria. When I went to preschool in Syria, and they did that to me in fucking preschool.
It's wild. It's crazy. It's like, you'll never understand these sorts of like, yo, yeah, you're not doing it now, but, or you're not experiencing it. So
yeah,
good luck.
They don't want to tell it to relive it. But then also I'll have a panic attack if the Wi-Fi goes down a Blue Bottle for 5 minutes. Like, we have lived with such privilege. They're like, let's just keep this feeling okay.
Also just like the sentence of something is so much easier to say than like imagining and living it. Like, for example, like walking through the snow thing for 10 miles, actually doing that is horrifying. You know what I mean? Experiencing any of these things are absolutely horrifying, but like these are their lives that they've lived through. And I'm so amazed, especially by my mom and my dad. Like, my mom especially just blows me away. The fact that she's like a stable person and like can talk to me and have a conversation and live her life and be happy. It blows my mind because here I am, always been depressed and suicidal my whole life. Like, what do I, for what? Like, I don't.
I know.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's so funny. And it's so amazing. It says so much about my parents. Like, my parents didn't have parents. Like, my parents didn't have dads or they had shitty dads or whatever. And they never hit me. Like, I'm like, how did you stop this from how did you learn how to parent? How did you do this?
That's how I feel like about my mom, too. Her dad was a terrible, like, he just beat his kids. And he beat my mom a lot because she was the oldest girl. And I guess she just did a lot of things wrong. But she is the most incredible mom. She never would even think of touching a child, like, in a violent way or otherwise. But, like, but I just can't believe, like, I think about that all the time. I was like, how did you know how to do this? You were given the worst example of parenting. Your mom was never around. Like, I don't understand how. And her siblings aren't the greatest parents, to be honest. I don't know.
And my mom, like, she's in both podcasts. She's the funniest person. And I don't know how you would ever be so funny if you suffered so much. Like, I don't know how. She's just like a very joyful, you listen to her talk and you're like, this is the most joyful being in the world. Not like she didn't have a dad and was pulled out of school in the sixth grade and, you know, had suffered a regime and all this stuff. You know, it's really kind of incredible.
Yeah.
Just how strong and resolute and resourceful our parents could be, you know?
Yeah. Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Live Nation presents Concert Week. Now through May 14th, get $25 tickets to over 5,000 shows. That's up to 75% off a summer full of your favorite artists, like 21 Savage, Alanis Morissette, Cage the Elephant, Celeste Barber, Dierks Bentley, Fade, Hootie and the Blowfish, Janet Jackson, Kidz Bop Kids, Meghan Trainor, Pistol Puma, Sarah McLachlan. Get tickets to more than 5,000 summer shows for just $25. Until now through May 14th. Visit LiveNation.com/Concert Week to learn more and plan your summer with Sean Paul, Sum 41, 30 Seconds to Mars, oh, and Two Door Cinema Club.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
Hey, this is Jody Sweetin from the podcast How Rude, Tanneritos. As a nostalgic voice from your past, I'm here to remind you that amongst the stressful and chaotic existence we live in 2024, you deserve to get away. It's time for a vacation, no matter when you're hearing this. And let me tell you how you'll get there. The 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe. Want to bring the family to the mountains with the Santa Fe's available H-Track all-wheel drive? Well, it's got standard third-row seating and available dual wireless charging pads for the kids who just want to stare at their phone and not talk to you. You know what I mean. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
And we're back with Chris Garcia.
Hey.
Okay, so we were talking about our parents and like kind of like what they compartmentalized to survive. I'm curious, like, what was your upbringing like in LA? Like, what did you, were your parents very strict, or like, what was that like for you? Did you ever feel like you know, like the classic, like trying to hide what your home life was like, because, you know, you felt like you didn't fit in, or like, what was that like?
Yeah. So I grew up, there was like, you know, with any, I'm sure, immigrant parents, I don't want to talk for every immigrant parent, but like with my parents, for sure, there was like a pressure to achieve and succeed and stuff like that. But because they had sacrificed so much to come here, so I would have the life that they never had. The fact is, like, I was bad at school and I was like hyper. And so that was kind of difficult for them. But we lived in Inglewood, and they always wanted me to go to a better school, and the schools in Inglewood just were underserved, and they weren't great. And, like, my kindergarten teacher didn't know how to use a ruler correctly. Like, she showed us how to use a ruler wrong. I'd come home with, like, a bunch of, like, get, like, bullied and have, like, I came home with candy canes in my hair one day.
Oh, my gosh.
And so my parents, like, so they started lying about where we live so I can go to school in a better city, in a better district. And so I always kind of had that in the back of my mind. Mm. So my parents lied. They got some other address so I can go to school in Westchester, which is the city right next to LAX on the other side of the 405, which is like, at the time, it was a better neighborhood. And they had lied for me to go to this Catholic school, like a cheap Catholic school, so I could have a better education. But like, we had to do stuff like, I had to get baptized, and so my parents took me to get baptized, and we weren't really Catholic or anything. And so we go to get baptized. I'm just like this little fat first grade kid, and just like, what are we doing in this weird church? And then the pastor being like, or the priest being like, oh, where are the godparents? And my dad being like, okay, I'll be right back. And then come back with my sister and our family mechanic posing as our godparents just so I can go to this school. And there's like my, you know, 18-year-old sister, 50-year-old mechanic, and just posing there. And so like, I had kind of grown up being like, I don't belong here. Mm. Like, I am not one of these kids.
Yeah.
It's all a sham. It could be, the rug could be pulled at any time. And so things would happen. Like in second grade, I had this really strict teacher, a nun named Sister Perpetua, and my parents, I know, isn't that like a ghost ass old name?
Perpetua?
Like, that name doesn't exist. Yeah, Sister
that's not
Perpetua.
Real.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And I found my yearbook recently, and it says, to Christian, the comedian. And it just, that's all it said. Like, it wasn't like, good job or anything. Anyway, she was kind of a hard ass, for sure, RIP, and she was old. And so
She was sick of waiting for my parents to pick me up because my dad worked in Canoga Park, which is so far away, and my mom worked like crazy long hours. So sometimes my parents would like pick me up from school at like 5 p.m. And so I would just be waiting in a convent with a bunch of nuns for like my parents to pick me up. And one day she got fed up and she was like, I'm going to, she's like, where are your parents? They're not picking up the phone or anything. I'm like, oh, they're definitely home. It could be off the hook or something. She's like, oh, fine, then I'm going to take you home. And so she got me in this like, I'll never forget, it's like a nun mobile. It was like a brown station wagon and with a crucifix, like a rosary hanging from the rearview mirror. And
this
drives
is like a cartoon.
I know. She drives me to our fake address. Like, and I'm in second grade and I know we have a fake address. And we like pull up to this nice house. And I'm like, wow, nice house. And I'm like, oh, yeah. We moved and they forgot to update the records. And so I take this nun on a wild goose chase. I'm like, make
oh my
a left
gosh.
Over here. And then she like drives me back to the school and my parents are like, hey. And she's like, you know, I was like, oh, sorry, big miscommunication. And I kind of remember like the feeling of my parents being like, fucking proud of you, dude. We thought you were soft, but this was some. Maybe you aren't as dumb as your grades are. But it was like a lot of funny capers like that where I was like, luckily I had my friends that I felt like we all had mustaches in second grade. They were like the non-white kids. I was like, oh, it's, you know, it's like Wasim, my Palestinian friend.
Yeah.
It's Marwan from Lebanon. It's Glenn, the Filipino. And we were like the mustache kids in the corner that were like, oh, our parents are, oh, is your lunch weird too? Mm-hmm. Like, oh, you're like... You know, like everyone would like either make fun of her lunches or like I brought a Cuban soda that looked like a beer and I had to go to like principal and be like, it's not a beer. It's like a soda. It's like, do you want to try it? But like, luckily I had other friends that were in the same situation, but my parents had put a lot on, aside from the academic pressure, it was also the pressure of knowing that we have this lie that they are doing for my sake and I can't even get my shit together to get good grades. Like, and so it was like, you know, today you'd be like, oh, you're, you know, this, you just have a different learning style. But like in the 80s when I grew up, I was just like, you know, this kid's a hyper mess. Mm-hmm. But like, mm-hmm. How could I not be, you know? Yeah. But like, but my parents were sweet and they were, I guess, kind of strict, but they just wanted me to get good grades and have a good education. And that's what they, you know, they were hell-bent on doing. And eventually I got good grades and a good education, but like it was a real wobbly bicycle at the beginning, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But they were loving and my dad would go to my baseball games and all that stuff, but you know.
Beat up umpires.
Yeah. But like I always had my back and stuff like that, but it was... Rafi said that he didn't feel like when he was growing up, he didn't feel like he was, he felt like he was seen as an extension of his parents.
Oh.
And that kind of blew
yeah.
my mind because I was like, oh,
yeah.
I was kind of seen as an extension of them and this being kind of an opportunity for them. Like my dad, if he was born in America, he's like, I'm going to be a PhD in aeronautics and be an engineer and this stuff. And that's what his dream is. Like, I joke that my dream is to get hit by a Walmart truck and get paid for the rest of my life, you know? Like,
yeah.
I'm not trying to, like, do science and stuff.
Yeah.
But, like, it was that type of upbringing where it was like, you know, let's live the American dream. And mm-hmm. then me being like, I have a different definition of American dream. But they were loving, but, you know, there was just that type of pressure and stuff.
Yeah. When did you start liking comedy? Like, when did you think about doing that?
Like from a child, like that second grade yearbook said, like the comedian. Like I think I just always was that kid or wanted to be that. My parents worked a lot, so I was a latchkey kid, and mm-hmm. I just watched a lot of comedy. Like I had like VHS tapes and stuff of like Eddie Murphy and Steve Martin, and watched like there was comedy on MTV. And my parents liked this Cuban comedian named Alvarez Guedes. And I was just like always loved comedy and my mom's really funny.
Mm-hmm.
And we would listen to it as a family too in Spanish. But I think just from the very beginning, it's just like what I've wanted to do my whole life.
Yeah. What did your parents think of that though?
You know, when I went to Cuba with my mom, my cousin there was like, so your mom tells me you're a journalist. And so if that answers your question.
Yeah.
So now my mom totally gets it, and Scattered really helped. She was like, oh, okay, yeah, this is legit. But I don't think my dad ever really understood it, because by the time he had Alzheimer's, it didn't make sense to him. But my mom likes comedy, but she was like, do you get paid for this? I was writing for a television show, and it was a multicam, and my mom came to visit. I thought it'd be a special moment for her to be like, hey, this is legit. And I introduced her to the showrunner and to the star. It was Gabriel Iglesias' show, and I introduced my mom to Gabriel Iglesias, and in Spanish she was like, you're paying my son, right? She still thought I was doing it for free and drink tickets and stuff, even though I helped pay her bills with these jokes.
Right.
And so, you know, but they've come to, it took a long time, and of course they're really scared and hesitant about it for a long time, but now that they see that I can do it for a living and stuff, and I think also my mom thinks that a lot of comedians in Latin culture are kind of gross, or that's what she had, the way she described it, they're kind of vulgar and stuff, and it's not classy, but that she was scared it was that, and then she realized, oh, it's not that. So I think she's cool with it now.
That's good. I mean, there is a bit of the turnaround time is always difficult. I mean, my parents, up until the last few years, were like, you're gonna die out there. And now are finally don't really talk to me about my job because I got health insurance, and now they're happy. But there was a time, you never know. I think up until I was 27 or something, my parents were like, go to law school.
Yeah, it's always an option.
Yeah.
Yeah. And is it? I'm just going to go to law school? No, I'm not. That's crazy. Yeah, I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah. If you'd love to argue, why don't you go to law school? It's still my life right now. I'm not completely out of that phase yet. But do you think your mom thinks you're funny?
Yeah, she thinks I'm funny.
Okay.
I think sometimes I'll tell her my jokes and she'll be like, nah, I don't care. Or she has a very, her favorite comedians are anyone that falls on the ground or sometimes wears a fat suit, or Mr. Bean or pratfalls.
Oh my God, my parents are obsessed with Mr. Bean.
God, it's like.
She's very into slapstick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Loves it. Or Paul Blart Mall Cop. My mom's like, that guy's hilarious. Look, he's on a Segway. But, you know, my sister loves The Office and watches a lot with her family. And my mom's like, I don't get it. It's just the guy look at the screen and shrugs. It's no funny. It's too subtle. It's, not her thing. But, yeah, we make each other laugh. So that's good. She's the best, though.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I love moms.
Must love moms.
Must love. Actually, yeah. That's a good alternative movie that has to be made. Must love moms. If you don't like my mom, if you don't like your mom, I mean, other than, never mind. These are inside thoughts. That should stay inside. Well, what have you, I mean, the past couple of years, I think, have been really hard for comedy in particular, just as far as everything. So what are you doing recently to, I don't know, fulfill yourself, if that's possible?
Well, it's been tough, and I definitely feel a little crazy. I haven't done stand-up in 2 months because of the lockdown, and before that it was 16 months or so. It'd been such a long time, and I've been doing it for 15 years, and so I'm used to going out all the time. And I mean, during the thick of the lockdown, my wife was she noticed that I was I need to perform, and she was like, do you want to buy a karaoke mic on Amazon or something? Jim, do you want to have a karaoke Zoom with friends? Because I miss the performing a lot. But I've kept myself busy with the podcast, and I sold a sitcom that I had to write, and I'm working on developing
That's
other
amazing.
Stuff.
Congrats. That's incredible.
Yeah, thank you. I had to pivot. It's so funny. I was writing a script that I was kind of dragging my feet on, and then my wife told me she was pregnant, and then I finished it in 24 hours. I was I got to get down to business.
Yeah.
So luckily, I'm still waiting to hear back if we're going to get a pilot order, but yeah, I sold a pilot to NBC about me and my dad and then my family, and have a couple cool other things in the works that you know, who knows if they'll happen. But I've stayed busy with some like TV projects and the podcast and stuff. But I'm going back on the road soon, and I'm like so excited to do stand up.
Yeah,
and I just hope I remember how to do it.
Oh, your 50 bicycle, right? Just hop back on. Yeah. That's so special.
Unless
though.
You do forget.
What'd you say? Sorry.
Unless he does forget.
Oh no. That's what the voice in my head is supposed to say. You're supposed to say, of course you got it.
Yeah. Yeah, you got it. Unless you don't. Could you imagine? You're like, punchline. Everyone's like, what?
But literally the first time I came back was Cinco de Mayo at the Comedy Store, which is not my thing. But I was like, I'll do a show. And then the cord came out of the mic. And then I was like, oh no, I'm dead. And then I held the mic down by my waist for like half of my set, which is like the basic rule is hold the mic by your face. And I was just like holding it down by my side. I was like, oh man, this is bad.
Yeah.
But I got it back. I got it back. Yeah. It just took, you know, I just one show to get it back. But
I mean, I think everyone had to relearn how to be in front of people. You know what I mean? Like relearn how to just do anything. But performing in particular, everyone's looking at you too. It's like you have to, there's a learning curve. You have to really accelerate.
I hope crowds are gentle with us.
Yeah.
You know, I know crowds aren't always, especially with comedy shows, there's an expectation.
Yeah.
But like, just give us a second to get back in.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's really special that the sitcom is about your family, though. That must be really nice.
Yeah. I have a big well to draw from, and I'm really proud of that. The water in there, you know? And so I always like talking about, I've always talked about my family in my act because they're just interesting people. I'm never someone that's like, what about Cheers with Cats or something? I'm like, not that person. I'm just like, oh, I just talk about my family and my life.
Yeah, I just realized an incredible thing.
I love that.
I don't know if you thought about this, but your daughter is going to have like a wealth of information about you and your family. You know what I mean? Like you're breaking a cycle as well because you have stuff to save and share and like it's immortalized. You know what I mean? So I think that's incredible. You've like broken the cycle of being, I don't know, not forthcoming about family and life, right?
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
What an observation. Thank you for saying that. I hopefully break the cycle or dampen it or something.
I mean, I can't wait for your daughter to just like discover all this stuff. I think it's incredible to have so much like love and attention and history about her family from her father's perspective. I think it's amazing.
Thank you. And you're right. And it is special that she'll get to know her, you know, I think about this a lot, especially because my dad's birthday is tomorrow, and the anniversary of his death is the next day, and then the day after that is my daughter's first birthday. So it's like it's crazy how life works. But I think it's so cool that you're right that she'll have something to look at and get to know her grandpa through these podcasts and her early life through this other podcast, and that there's like a public record of it. That is pretty cool. Thank you. That felt nice.
Yeah. You're welcome. I'm going to wrap it up now on that note before I say anything else. But I'm glad that that was a good thing to say.
It made my day. Thank you.
I'm happy to hear that. Thank you so much for being on our show. It was a joy to talk to you.
Thank you so much for having me. This is so dope what y'all are doing. And I hope, I'm so glad that you feel fortified and creating the space where we get to go, oh shit, we're not the only ones that had to do this. So a lot of us had to go through this, and we have a nice, you know, shared bonding through that. That's wonderful.
Yeah, commiserating.
Yeah.
Thanks again for being on the show. Where can our listeners find you on the internet? Where can they listen to the podcast? Probably everywhere, but let's do the whole spiel.
Finding Raffy is, as they say, wherever you find your podcasts. And please listen to that. The fourth episode just came out, and there's going to be 10 total. You could find Scattered in the same places. And then I'm on Twitter at _ Chris Garcia.
You're one of those people that deleted Instagram?
No, I have that too. My Instagram. Oh,
okay. I was gonna say, like, the fact that you didn't even mention it, like, respect. Like, oh. You're better off not even being active out there.
I've just got many followers, you know, I'm kind of getting sick of it. No, I'm just kidding. I only have 5,000 followers. Yeah, I should promote that too. My
Instagram. You don't have to. I mean, some people are privates. I didn't mean to say that. I was just like, I wish I was someone that could delete it.
Mine is very public and needs more support. So it's Rad Tuna. It's Instagram. It's at Rad Tuna.
Yeah, Rad Tunes.
Cool. All the Chris Garcias are always taken. But thank you so much for having me. I've had such a nice time talking to you too.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Yes. Yeah, this was a joy. I'm going to wrap us out of here. This is Ethnically Ambiguous, Ethnically Amb, A-M-B on Twitter, and Ethnically Ambig, A-M-B-I-G on Instagram. I'm Shireen, Shirohiro on Twitter, on Instagram. Shirohiro on Instagram is Shirohiro666 on Twitter.
And I'm at Anna Hosea on Twitter. Couldn't remember that word for a brief second, even though I've said that sentence 5 million times.
Okay. That's our episode. Until next time, go listen to Scattered, go listen to Finding Raffi, do all the stuff.
Yeah. So follow Chris on everything, follow him in person, and have a good day! Bye!
Bye!
Ambiguous is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Live Nation presents Concert Week. Now through May 14th, get $25 tickets to over 5,000 shows. That's up to 75% off a summer full of your favorite artists, like 21 Savage, Alanis Morissette, Cage the Elephant, Celeste Barber, Dierks Bentley, Fade, Hootie and the Blowfish, Janet Jackson, Kidz Bop Kids, Meghan Trainor, Pistol Puma, Sarah McLachlan. Get tickets to more than 5,000 summer shows for just $25. Until now through May 14th. Visit LiveNation.com/Concert Week to learn more and plan your summer with Sean Paul, Sum 41, 30 Seconds to Mars, and Two Door Cinema Club.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.